You're going to love my next guest. His name is Dr. Paul Taylor. He's a PhD that teaches at the University of Colorado School of Public Affairs. He's also a former law enforcement officer himself. And in this discussion, we're going to talk about different topics relating to law enforcement, but we're also going to narrow in on Dr. Taylor's expertise, which is police decision-making and the human factors that make those decisions possible. Dr. Paul Taylor. Next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. We know you got many options, but you keep coming back to the top ranked Criminal Justice Evolution podcast, top ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much. If you would share it with your family and friends and give us that 5-star rating on Apple Podcast, we sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you are doing, wherever you are at. Thank you for doing it every day, putting everything on the line. Remember this. You are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. If you want some kick-ass apparel made specifically for you, the law enforcement professional, look no further than The Badge Life. Everything from hoodies, tank tops, gym gear, you're going to love everything that they have to offer. And again, it was made for you, the law enforcement professional, by a law enforcement professional, Tony Malik, my good friend. You're going to see a link in the show notes to The Badge Life. Check them out. You will not be disappointed. Such an honor to be partnered with an amazing company like Detectachem. This company is helping keep our brave men and women safer every day by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of their hands. This application-based technology detects explosives, illicit drugs, now COVID-19. Folks, if you don't have this technology, you really got to look into it. Check out the link to Detectachem on the CJEvolution.com website. You know, now more than ever, trust is so important, so paramount between law enforcement and the community. I want to tell you about a company called Officer Survey. If you want better engagement, if you want to be able to solve problems quickly and build more community trust, I want you to look into Officer Survey. They help you build profound relationships with the community by allowing them to provide feedback after every dispatch call, plus an early intervention system to ID issues at the earliest possible stage so that an intervention and support can be offered before it's too late. Folks, go to officersurvey.com and build a better relationship between your organization and your community. Schedule a demo today. On to this amazing show with Dr. Paul Taylor. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is Paul Taylor. Taylor, welcome, Paul.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you for having me.
I just got done telling you, I hope I don't screw up your name. And I was like, I just almost screwed up your name, Paul Taylor. Thanks for coming on the show, brother. I appreciate you being here. And we're both in beautiful state of Colorado. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's an honor to be here. And it's actually sunny outside.
I know.
So, yeah, it's beautiful.
It's great. It's great. So for the listener out there, Paul, I know your background. But for those listeners out there that don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of your background, sir?
Sure. So I have about 10 years of active law enforcement experience. It was everything from a FTO to a street sergeant to a training manager for a small department. Around 2014, given some events that were going on around the world and within my own agency, I made a decision to go and pursue my PhD. I got my PhD at the University of Albany, State University of New York. I studied police decision making, human factors, and system safety in the context of police encounters with the public. And I'm currently an assistant professor at the University of Colorado Denver School of Public Affairs. That's the short version, Patrick.
Well, that's cool. First of all, brother, thank you for your service. And thank you. I mean, that's pretty cool, man, going after your PhD. I mean, I'm sure there's you know, people who do that, but I never went for my PhD and I got a couple master's degree. I always wonder if I should have, but yeah, I know going after a doctorate is pretty rigorous, right?
You know, I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad I did it when I did it in my life. I think having some background in the area that you study really helps you to ask better questions. And so I was really blessed to be able to spend 4 years of my life just kind of focusing on those questions and study around those questions. And so I wouldn't recommend it for everybody, but I'm very grateful for the time that I had to dedicate to that.
Yeah. And like you, I mean, I love teaching, instructing, and mentoring, you know, the next generation of criminal justice professionals. I've always enjoyed teaching. I've done it for probably over a decade now. I'm thinking back. Yeah, probably over a decade now. But I love teaching. And you, obviously you do, or you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, love teaching. Love working with undergraduate and graduate students. Also really love working with law enforcement, actively engaged in training all over the country. And so, yeah, there's really nothing more rewarding than giving back to the career field that gave so much to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for serving again, brother. Now, we were talking a little bit before we started about some different topics, but one of those topics were challenges, you know, that law enforcement are going to face the profession going forward. From your lens, from your perspective, as being an educator and former law enforcement, you know, I mean, you have your finger on the pulse of a lot of stuff that's going on in the world, obviously. I mean, what's some of the challenges, Paul? I mean, I know it's probably a very broad question, but if you can niche it down or dial it down a little bit, from your perspective, Paul Taylor, what do you think some of the issues are going to be going forward?
Boy, that's a big question.
Yeah.
I think one of the primary issues, and really, and I say this because it's probably where I focus a lot of my research and my effort, is the way that we approach bad outcomes, the way that we approach less than desirable outcomes in policing. And the tendency really is to kind of look at it and say, well, you know, this officer was involved in an incident. And from an organizational standpoint, the tendency is to say, well, the problem is out there. You know, we're going to thoroughly investigate the problem and we'll either get rid of the problem or we'll determine that they weren't really a problem and we'll bring them on back on board. Well, that focus, that kind of approach to bad outcomes really keeps the organization and the profession from growing. Mm-hmm. So back in 2014, I was working as a training manager for my department. I thought I was pretty conscientious. I was trying to be pretty forward thinking about the way I was doing things. And then we started to have a series of kind of really publicized officer involved shootings or in custody deaths. And I was frustrated because the only way that I could really learn about those events was by watching YouTube videos like everybody else and trying to just divine from that the lessons that I should be teaching my officers. Mm-hmm. Now, when I grew up, my mom and my dad, they were in the medical profession. My dad was a doctor and my mom was a nurse. And the medical profession has a very different way of looking at those things. And if you could imagine for a moment, my dad was a good doctor. He passed away in 2008, but he was good at what he did, but he killed people.
Yeah.
Like as a result of the things that he did, not just because people were going to die anyway, but he made mistakes.
Sure.
And people died as a result of that. But if you imagine for a moment, if we approach that the same way that we approach a similar outcome in law enforcement, right? The hospital administration would walk up to my dad, hand him his union rep card, say they need to call him and that he's going to be criminally and administratively investigated.
Yeah.
What would the profession learn from that? Nothing, because my dad wouldn't be able to talk about it. We wouldn't be able to actually learn what caused the event. He'd have to shut down and we'd do a criminal investigation. And then what if we went to the family of the person who died in the emergency room and said, well, listen, we're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to thoroughly investigate this. And then after a 14-month investigation, we went back to that family and we said, we've thoroughly investigated this and we found that the doctor and the nurse haven't committed a crime or a policy violation. Would that be enough for the family? And how long would the public actually have faith in the hospital that they were dealing with? And so I think that our approach to those things does a number of things. One, I think it sets up a false expectation from the public when there's a criminal investigation. Two, I think it stunts organizational learning and it keeps us from improving as a profession. And three, for the family and the community of the person involved, it doesn't at all provide any kind of notion of improvement or moving forward. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of just, is this a crime or isn't it? And yeah. I would argue the law is not the best measure for a good outcome.
Yeah. That's well said. And so what, I mean, it seems to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, I mean, it's a culture thing, right? I mean, we have to try to change the culture among many other things in law enforcement, but it's a culture thing. So in your opinion, from your perspective, I mean, how do we change some of these cultures that have, you know, stood the test of time? I know every department's a little different. They are different with their cultures, but overall, how do we change things in law enforcement? Because that's really what has to happen to go forward, right? And what I've seen in my perspectives is, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. And we don't need to change. And it's a good old boy network. And not in every department, but in some it is. So, you know, how do we change that?
Yeah, and I think it goes beyond just being a good old boy network. I think some of it is that that's fundamentally what law enforcement does, mm-hmm. right? They investigate and assign culpability for wrongdoing. And so when there's an organizational crisis or something goes wrong, that's the tendency, right? We want to do what it is that we do best. And so we criminally and we administratively investigate it. But that process in and of itself, again, if we took a similar approach to a plane crash, right? And all we did was focus the lens on the final actions of the pilot, we would miss the reason for the plane crash most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's broadening our perspective and understanding, well, what is it that we really need to get out of this? Liability is another issue. A fear of liability is another issue that comes into play. And medicine went through this in the 90s when a task force came out and found the number of error-related deaths in medicine. People were shocked. And doctors said, well, we can't look at it through that lens. We can't look at these things as error because we're going to get sued. And they actually had to get legislative protection in order to protect that review process. The term accountability is thrown around all the time in law enforcement and those that are seeking law enforcement reform. And I oftentimes will ask people, well, what do you mean by accountability? And they'll come up with different ideas. Well, we need to hold officers accountable. We need to hold the department accountable. And I would argue we need to create a culture and environment in which we have the ability to give account, which is safe and allows us to give account for our actions as individual officers and as organizations. That's the only way you grow. And if you really want to reform policing, if you really want to change the culture of policing, we can't have an unjust culture within policing. Mm-hmm. We have to have a just culture within policing that creates the psychological safety necessary for officers and for departments to give account.
Yeah. And I think what we've seen, brother, and you've seen it over in the last probably year and a half, maybe 2 years, you know, I love what you said about, I mean, because if we keep doing this, not in all instances, but it breeds, you know, it does a couple things like we were talking before. It's just a toxic environment and it doesn't address some real issues, right? Mm-hmm. That could be happening within the organization, correct?
Absolutely. And we're not really looking at what we do right or what we do wrong. A great example are the taser confusion shootings that we've seen across the country, right? These mm-hmm. are horrible events. They result in a tragedy for the person who is shot, for their family, for the community, and for the officer who didn't intend to shoot someone who intended to use their taser, and they end up shooting the person. Well, our approach to those have been to criminally prosecute the officers involved. And yet we're not really learning about the processes that led to those outcomes. And we're not preventing the next one. What we know about error, what we know about human beings, is that people in similar situations with similar experience and similar training are going to tend to respond in similar ways to a similar stimulus, right? And so mm-hmm. where we find a bad outcome, we're going to find repeated bad outcomes across time and people. And so rather than broadening the lens, and this is not to say we don't have criminals in law enforcement that we need to look at and that there aren't issues with individuals, but if we don't broaden that lens, right, we miss those things. And we're just going to be doomed to repeat them over and over and over again. And so I think it's a cultural issue, but it's also a functional issue in how we how we actually approach bad outcomes. We put so much emphasis in law enforcement on prevention, right? So we need to write policies. We need to have better training. We need to recruit better. But what we don't do is look at it and say, well, what do we do when we do have a bad outcome? How do we respond to that? And what is the approach to our community? What is the approach to our officers who are involved and from an organizational standpoint? And how do we start to restore these things? Given the population that law enforcement deals with, just like in medicine, right? In the emergency room, given the population that they deal with, at times there are going to be bad outcomes. And then rather than trying to put all of our energy into prevention, and we should try to prevent them, but rather than putting all of our energy into that, we also need to understand what to do when they happen so that we were prepared to start to restore our ties with our community and we're able to also restore our ties within our organizations.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And I was thinking of a couple cases recently, bro. I mean, over the last year where officers have been terminated before an investigation even started or at the very beginning of an investigation. And I was thinking, oh, where is the officer's due process? I mean, it used to be, you know, there's an officer involved or critical incident. Okay, we bring in a shoot team and all this other stuff. Okay, they investigate it. The officer's on admin leave or whatever. And I know each case is different, but I know there's been some cases in the last year where officers have been terminated immediately without any kind of due process. So going back to what you were saying about outcomes. So how does that help anything?
Yeah. And let's just take the legal aspect out of it altogether. So let's take the due process aspect out of it altogether. If I just get rid of that person without organizationally learning anything, then we've doomed ourselves to repeat it.
And
what we've said is we've said the problem is this individual, right? It's the bad apple approach. And I hear that term thrown around a lot after some high profile events at the beginning, the middle of the summer, you know, across the nation, people were saying, well, those are bad apples. They need to be prosecuted. Right. But the question should have been, why did it make sense for a 10, 13 year officer to do what they did in that case? Because I guarantee you the week before, officers across the nation were doing something very, very similar, and it didn't lead to a bad outcome in those cases. And we need to understand why that practice is brittle. We need to understand why in this case it led to a tragedy when in most cases it doesn't, because that's what's going to allow us to start to adjust. And if you really want to talk about reform, that would be a fundamental reform in policing, right? Rather than placing the lens on the last individual involved in an outcome, we look at the system around that outcome to try and understand how we can prevent those types of things from happening going forward.
Yeah. And how do we, Paul, I mean, how do we, you know, as educators and you know, practitioners in law enforcement, I mean, how do we develop more resiliency in our first responder? I know you talk a lot about this when it comes to, you know, certain scenarios, shoot, no shoot stuff, but how do we, and it's all important, obviously, but how do we teach officers or develop them to be more resilient?
You know, and the idea, I love the idea of resilience. I like it at the individual level. I like it at the operational level, right? Mm-hmm. We need to engineer resilience into our response. And really the concept of resilience is that when we're surprised by something, right, we have the flexibility to respond to it. And I think that's at the individual level. I think that's at the response level, that when something that is unexpected happens in our lives, that we still have the flexibility to respond, that we're not so consumed with what it is, that it doesn't take up so much of our space that we can't, that we have something to fall back on. I'm trying to think of her name right now. She wrote an amazing book, a former law enforcement officer, specifically on resilience. And I think she makes a tremendous point. And her point is that it's not something that you do after the fact. You don't create resilience after you've been involved in an incident. That investment in resilience happens long before. It's an investment in those around you. It's an investment in your habits as far as working out and taking care of your body and eating right and getting enough sleep. It's an investment in the relationships that you have at home. It's an investment in the relationships you have at work. And so I think that resilience is something that is something that you develop and you put in place prior to an event occurring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And we were talking again before about, you know, the era of COVID we're in right now and how, you know, it's always been an isolated profession, in my opinion. The officer is usually a one-man car driving around by him or herself. And so how, you know, it's going to take a lot of resiliency because, as you pointed out, Paul, before we started, I mean, it's always been challenging, obviously. Now you have an officer showing up in a mask.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, how do you navigate that? I mean, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's hard. And to be quite honest with you, I think a lot of us are trying to understand exactly what officers are going through right now. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a group of officers just this last week who, like you were saying, were describing the challenges of trying to de-escalate when you don't have your face. And you can't see someone else's face. The challenges of trying to deal with somebody who's maybe already a little bit paranoid or doesn't trust law enforcement, and now you've rolled up and only your eyes are visible. I think these challenges are real, and I think a lot of us who haven't worked on the street during this time don't have a full appreciation of what that means. But I think that it's even more important during a time of such social unrest and turmoil, where we have a pandemic that has some very real physical implications for human-to-human interaction. I think it's even more important that we're making sure that we're investing in our relationships, that we're taking the time to take care of ourselves, to work out, to eat healthy, to get sleep, because it is going to be taxing, and we are likely putting demands on our bodies and on our relationships that we haven't before, and so I think that's critical.
Yeah. And I used to tell people, you know, cause you know, eating right, you know, cause you said it, that's always, you know, well, how do I eat right? Or if I'm working the graveyard shift and, you know, there's nothing open and I just go to Conoco or some gas station and buy a bunch of well, you know, you got to prepare, you know, you know, you can make your lunches and stuff, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you, you know, taking care of yourself, you know, physically, I mean, that includes eating, getting sleep. And I know it's challenging to get sleep, as you do, Paul, but you can do it, but you just got to be dedicated and make it a priority, right?
And I think you have to look at it as an investment.
Yeah,
it really is, because you're not going to start doing those things after a high stress event in your life. You're certainly not going to start eating better when something bad happens. No. and you need to fall back on that physical, mental, and relationship aspects of yep. resilience. And so I think it is something that you have to invest in at the front end.
Now, what do you think about this, brother? I always tell officers, you know, when I'd go and give a thing at the academy or something, they'd ask me, you know, what do you think the most important thing about this career is? And I said, well, a lot of it's important. It's all important. But what I would, tell you to do is, you know, get some friends outside of law enforcement. Because I really believe in that. So, I mean, that for me, you know, Paul, I don't know about your experience but that for me was like a turning point. And I'm, again, this isn't a dig on law enforcement, but it really kind of changed my mindset and things like that when I had started developing relationships outside of law enforcement. I don't know what your thought is on that.
Yeah. And so on multiple levels, I think a lot of us kind of had the response when the pandemic hit and they started recommending social distancing. Well, a lot of us were able to say, well, we've been social distancing for years. Right? Like not, that's not
been
that's
doing
not
that problem. From day one.
Yeah. And I think that's a fairly easy response to give for a lot of law enforcement officers. Yeah. And it's probably true for a lot of law enforcement officers. But I will say that really that a lot of the issues that we see with social media, in that we kind of create this box where we're just hearing our own opinions and our own thoughts, and we're having it fed back to us.
And
whether those relationships come from your family or those relationships come from the outside, or one of the things I've been doing in my classroom is I've been bringing a group of police officers in, having them sit down with my students for the full semester. So every Wednesday they'd come in, sit down, and we just talk about controversial subjects, right? So
I would throw
the grenade into the middle of the room and they would talk through it. And you watch as these two groups, so we've got undergraduate students, some of them have really strong feelings about policing. Mm-hmm. We've got police officers, some of them have really strong feelings about undergraduate students. But you watch as they sit down and they start having conversations. You watch those barriers start to break down, and not just on one side, right? But on both sides, where people are starting to understand each other's perspectives. Everybody walks away feeling like they've gained something. They've gained a new perspective. They're able to see the world in a little bit bigger way. And I think it's really important in policing, while we're talking about broadening perspectives, I really think it's important for police officers to get out and get an education.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a formal education, right? You don't have to go and get your bachelor's, master's, all the way up to a PhD, but we need more cops to do that, because we need law enforcement officers who are able to take what they know in their world and come out and begin to apply the theories, the research methods, ask the questions that allow us to start kind of taking a broader perspective on the problems that, like you said before, have kind of always been there and we've always treated the same way. If we don't do that, right? And I know I'm getting a little off topic here, Patrick, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine, go ahead.
But if we don't do that, really what we do is we allow a lot of academics, a lot of lawyers who don't have that perspective to come in and testify before Congress, testify before the task force for 21st century policing, and kind of drive the profession. And so we need more officers to broaden their perspective in that way as well.
I love it. And I agree with you 100%. And I was not the open mind that I am today. You know, I still have opinions obviously on certain things, but you know, I was like that, you know, several years ago. I was like, I was like, I had my beliefs and I'm not going to, you know, expand, you know, and open up and be more broad. But when I did do that, I go back to, you know, having friends outside of law enforcement. I mean, I remember being very adamant with my wife saying, I don't want to go out. I want to meet new people. What are you, crazy? They're not cops. They don't have a gun. They don't have a badge or a star. They're them. Mm-hmm. Right? And then the catalyst for me, brother, was really, I mean, opening up and going out there and meeting new people and realizing, look, never everybody, in fact, the majority of people out there are good people. I mean, it's just, we live in this bubble in law enforcement. And I think that really limits us, obviously, in our thinking. And, you know, again, and I agree with you, you know, the more people we out there getting, you know, more officers that are better educated and opening up their minds more, I think that's going to help solve a lot of these issues that we have. Right.
Well, I 100% agree. And look, these conversations right now, whether that's with your church group or whether that's with your extended family, sitting down and just having conversations and getting people's perspectives it is huge. I've really gotten away from having in the classroom environment, from having law enforcement officers kind of come in and stand up front and give their perspective and tell war stories, for lack of a better term. And I'm much more about individuals sitting down and having conversations, sharing concerns, sharing fears, sharing, you know, what it is that they do and how it is they perceive the world, and you see massive changes in individuals, and it really does broaden. It really does start to broaden people's perspective. I had a chief that sat through my last semester, and he said it was the best law enforcement training he'd ever had. And it wasn't training, right?
Yeah.
It was just conversations. And we were in the middle of it, right? This last semester, but people were able to sit down and have be real, to be people.
Yeah, it's authentic. And that's what people want, those authentic conversations. You know,
and you can no longer just kind of lump people together, right? And that's what's so easy. I think that's a danger with masks, right? It's so much easier to just look at a cop with a mask on as just a, you know, a symbol of government that we can place whatever we feel about government on. But when you sit down, everybody's wearing civilian clothes and you're just having a conversation or sharing a beer or a cup of coffee, you can be real with people and they can be real with you. And both parties walk away better for it.
Yeah, I love it. I love that approach, brother. And so I'm somebody who's interested in getting into law enforcement. And I come to you, I mean, maybe I'm one of your students, Paul, and I'm sure you've gotten this, and say, you know, I really want to become a cop. I really want to be a patrol officer, whatever. What advice would you give me right now?
Boy, that's hard.
I know that's why I threw it at you.
You know, I do get a lot of people that come in and I encourage people to get out and ride with officers.
Yeah.
Whether they want to get into law enforcement or they're really critical of law enforcement. So I get both. Mm-hmm. And my answer is the same for both. You should get out and see what the job really is. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we get into policing. I got into policing with kind of a false idea about what policing was really all about. And it took a while for me to figure it out. And I think I would encourage people to get out with their local police departments, to ride with a lot of police departments, and to kind of experience what policing is today. But I encourage activists to do that as well, particularly when they start talking about national issues. I encourage them to get out with their local law enforcement agency to really learn what it is that, what it means, what law enforcement is like in their city, right?
Yeah, I think there was a video, I think in 2020, maybe it was in 2019, where there was a kind of an activist, a person who didn't really support the police, but I can't remember if he was a city councilman or something like that, but he went out and he was doing these no shoot scenarios. And it really, you stop a car, you've been through them, brother, and they're shooting like what, paintballs or something at him or whatever. And then it's simulations or whatever. And it really changed his perspective on things because he was like, well, wait a minute, this is actually hard shit. I mean, you guys got to make split second decisions. I can't remember the name of the video, but it went viral and it was very popular for a while, but I agree with you. And I tell my students, because, when I teach, they all want to be homicide detectives, or not all of them, but some of them, and they don't realize that, well, first of all, you're just not going to get thrown into that. There's a process. But I agree. I mean, most people know what they know of law enforcement from TVs and movies. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same. I tell people all the time, look, I mean, what you're seeing on TV or the movies is not, for the most part, an accurate portrayal of what people do in law enforcement. So I tell them exactly what you said. Go on a ride along. Go to Denver Police or Aurora, whoever you want, and just, I don't know how it is now with COVID, but I'm sure that they're still doing ride alongs, right?
Actually, that's
I don't know.
They may not be.
They might not be. I don't.
Yeah, that may be shut down.
But
go to city council meetings. Go to a police council meeting and start to understand, you know, what it means to be a police officer in your city. I think going into it eyes wide open, and then the next thing goes back to this idea of developing resilience. I encourage my students to maintain, that are actually going into law enforcement, to really work to maintain the relationships that they currently have. I think it's critical. It's very easy to lose yourself in this profession. Mm-hmm. I think
absolutely.
And so I think it's critical to put in the effort and to be conscientious about maintaining those relationships and developing other relationships outside of law enforcement as well.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why, like I said before, I mean, it really was helpful for me, a game changer for me. When I started getting friends outside of law enforcement, because, I wasn't around. You and I both know, Paul, law enforcement, at least in my opinion, is inherently toxic. And not that everybody in law enforcement is toxic, but it's a toxic environment. That's just the way it is. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, with the calls we go to and everything. And eventually that's going to wear on most people. I know it did me. Mm-hmm. But what helped me out a lot, like I said, is having activities outside of the PD, you know, taking care of myself better, eating better, having associations that weren't cops. So, I mean, I always encourage people to do that and have a backup plan, you know, have something that you're going to do. I mean, obviously you're doing great with, you know, education and teaching and stuff like that. But I always tell people, okay, you got your career and you do this. Okay. What are you going to do afterwards? We're all living longer, at least most of us. So what are you going to do afterwards? All it takes is, as you know, brother, it takes, God forbid, an injury or something like that, you're out of it. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can align those things with the experience and the training you have to kind of start to give back, I think that's really valuable for people. I think it's hard on people as they retire or as they leave the profession to leave it cold turkey. And I think there's something to be said for giving back to something that is giving you a lot. The other thing that, you know, as you were talking, I thought about, and I was just teaching a class for another group of law enforcement officers on it was, interestingly enough, resilient leadership. Oh, yeah. And I think a critical aspect that we miss is ownership, right? And it's ownership of our sphere of control. In law enforcement, it's very easy to kind of get lost in the bureaucratic machine and become very frustrated with what's happening around us. But the ability to own and control what you can, mm-hmm. And not just to be a victim of the organization, I think is really critical. And it's a completely different mindset, right? Yeah. So if you're just sitting there waiting for things to come down to you, you're complaining about what's happened with the organization, what the chief is doing and what's going on outside of your sphere, you have no control. And we know that sense of no control is really, is dangerous for your mental health.
Yeah.
And you know, can be a driver for things like PTSD and other things. And so where you can have ownership, even within your limited sphere, and where you can say, I control this, owning that, you can really change the dynamic in your organization. That gets even more true as you move up. I like to think of it as a ship, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a corporal not that that would be a rank inside of a ship, but if you're a corporal inside of a ship and there was a storm outside, right? Would you look into that ship and say, well, I want a corporal who's just complaining about the situation, that's complaining about the storm, that's complaining about the captain? Or do you want a corporal who owns the situation, that understands that there's a storm outside, that, you know, maybe we don't have the best captain in the world, but owns it for the people around them? That's a completely different situation. And those are the people that we talk about after the fact, right? That's the hero that really holds the ship together for everybody else. For everybody's mental health, I'm a big proponent of ownership in your own space.
Yeah. 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 And I love what you said. I mean, it made me think about, you know, you mentioned, you know, having, you know, a corporal or somebody with some rank, and some of the biggest people, the change agents, for lack of a better word, and you've heard of that before, you know, where people, you don't have to be, have formal rank to be a leader. Some of the best leaders, you know, that were in organizations that I work for had no rank.
Yeah.
But they were the ones that were keeping shit together. And they were the ones that, you know, were resilient and kind of, you know, rubbing that off on other people. And then, of course, the opposite, where, like you said, the people who failed to take ownership, and those are the people that you don't want to be around.
Yeah. And it's at every level of the organization.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And, you know, when you're a young officer, you know, hopefully you're not too aware of your organizational structure, right? You're out doing work. You enjoy the job, but at some point along the lines, even if you haven't promoted, I think a lot of officers start to become victims of their own organizations, for lack of a better term. And so a way to keep that from happening is, even if you're at the lowest rung of the promotional ladder, taking ownership of what you can control and letting go of what you can't is it's critical.
Yeah. And one thing that helped me was, you know, learning not to, and it goes into, you know, controlling and not being able to control everything. You can't control a lot of things out there, but the things that I learned over the years were, you know, I mean, the things that I worried about, I mean, I generally, you know, the crap I was like, oh my God, if this happens, most of the time it never came to fruition. And if it did, I made it so big in my mind that it turned out to be not a big deal. Now, I'm not saying that things aren't a big deal sometimes. Of course they are. Mm. But the things I used to worry about, like I said, I made them so big in my mind that, you know, I was just wasting energy. And if it did come to pass, I was like, well, it's not that big of a deal. You know what I mean? I think that goes back into what you were saying about controlling everything. I mean, you can't control a lot of shit. So quit worrying about it.
Yeah. It's easy to do. You know, I watch my son as he's working on some new sports move, right?
Yeah.
And the more frustrated he gets with his own performance or with the throw that was given to him, you know, the less he less concentration, focus of attention he has to give the actual task. Right. And so it becomes a snowball effect of frustration, getting frustrated and angry, and it turns inward and I'm no longer focusing on it. And then I drop another pass or I don't perform the way that I wanted to perform. And it's a perpetual cycle. Where we can start to let go of some of that and control the things that we can, that can be really helpful.
Yeah. Well, Paul Taylor, thank you so much, brother, for coming on the show. Where can people reach out to you, brother? I know, I think you mentioned LinkedIn. Anywhere else that they can reach you?
I'm on LinkedIn. People are welcome to email me as well. Paul.Taylor@ucdenver.edu is my work email. And love to talk to anyone that's interested.
Yeah. And what's really quick, any big things on your horizon, brother? I think there's a book in your, I mean, I can see a book in your future, brother. I mean, I know, just you mean you're obviously a smart guy and you got a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge. I mean, shit, you got to put something together.
I appreciate that, Patrick. I'm constantly writing. So working on a couple, actually two books.
Awesome.
And so hopefully those will be coming out soon. Really looking at how we approach critical incidents and learning and understanding from these events. And you know, one of the aspects that I'm looking at is the interview process. Mm-hmm. We can do so much better with how we approach officers after these encounters from a learning perspective, mm-hmm. from an organizational perspective. Hopefully some of them will be coming out soon.
Yeah, that's awesome, bro. I'd love to have you back on. I know for the listeners, Paul and I have a lot of mutual friends, and we were talking before we started. You know, I want to do some more roundtables, and Brett, I'd love to have you on an upcoming roundtable if you'd be interested. That'd be awesome.
Patrick, anytime. I appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate you, brother, and you know, educating the next generation and serving in this great profession we call law enforcement. Much success to you, my friend, and I hope to talk to you very soon down the road.
You too, sir. Take care.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.